Later this summer, we mark the 60th anniversary of the American bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. A month after the atomic bombs, George Weller became the first Western journalist to see firsthand the devastation in Nagasaki. To do that, he had to hire a rowboat, hop trains, pose as a U.S. Army colonel. But after all of that, his stories never saw print, at least not until now. The Japanese newspaper Mainichi Shimbun began serializing the stories this month. Their journey from the rubble of Nagasaki through post-war censorship to find an audience now is its own story. To tell it, we're joined by George Weller's son, Anthony Weller, and he's with us from their family home in southern Italy. Good to speak with you.
Nice to speak to you, finally, after 60 years.
Well, start at the beginning. What did it take for your father to get into Nagasaki? He was working for the Chicago Daily News at the time, right?
He was working for the Chicago Daily News, and he'd already had quite a war. He'd been one of the last journalists to stay in Singapore when it fell, and the last on the last boat out of Java, and it covered the war in the Pacific from, what, early 42 till the signing on the Missouri. And at that point, like all the other journalists at the surrender of Japan, he was told that, according to General MacArthur, all southern Japan, including Hiroshima and Nagasaki, were very firmly off limits. And he determined he was, after several years of bucking MacArthur's censorship, and after indeed the surrender of Japan, he felt he had every right to go wherever he wanted. So he was the only journalist who volunteered to go see an otherwise utterly dull, abandoned kamikaze base that was on an island a few hundred yards off the mainland. And he snuck away from his sort of greenhorn army lieutenant who was supposed to be watching him and had a motorboat arranged and got over to the mainland. And after a day and a half of trains, managed to make it into Nagasaki on the 6th of September.
So that's a month after the bombing at Hiroshima and just 3 days short of a month of the bombing of Nagasaki.
Right. It was exactly 4 weeks after the bombing of Nagasaki, yeah.
At the time, people didn't really understand, even experts, but certainly not your father and the people he met in Nagasaki, the effects of radiation.
Well, it turns out that the Japanese doctors, by the time he got there, had been extremely efficient in classifying the effects of radiation on every single organ. But the interesting thing to read the entire archive, which is fairly substantial, I think it's about 25,000 words, is to see my father's gradual learning go up from day to day as he interviews more and more doctors and sees more and more patients. And it becomes ever more mysterious why people who are apparently unblemished are dying, and why people who are carrying the effects of the terrible fires that broke out through Nagasaki as a result of the bomb or have these odd rashes sometimes are recovering.
By the way, if you'd like to read George Weller's original articles, you can find a link to them on our webpage at npr.org and go on from there to look at the articles. This was a series of articles that he wrote, as he said, near 25,000 words overall. He then submitted them, as he was supposed to Tokyo?
Yeah, he had sort of brazened his way in. He'd realized, as he described himself afterwards, as a kind of rumpled laundry bag of a correspondent, that he wasn't going to be able to just get very far with the Japanese commanding officers. So he promoted himself to colonel and hid his war correspondent badges in his back pocket. And
war correspondents wore uniforms in those days.
They wore uniforms, but they also wore sort of epaulette badges that said war correspondent. And so he stuck those in his pocket and demanded to be taken to the Japanese general in command of Nagasaki, and said he was Colonel Weller, and he had been ordered by General MacArthur to inspect the situation and send daily reports to Tokyo. And the general demanded to see his orders, and my father said, well, if you don't believe me, you're welcome to call General MacArthur, but just before you do so, I heartily suggest you consider the seriousness of your position. And at that point, the general bowed and agreed to provide him with a car and a driver another car to take his dispatches to Tokyo every day.
Did your father speak Japanese?
No.
So this was all through an interpreter?
He was provided with an interpreter as well.
Uh-huh. It sounds like he was a pretty good poker player, though. We are talking with Anthony Weller, the son of George Weller, the first journalist to reach Nagasaki after the atomic bombing at the end of the Second World War. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And you told us how the dispatches then got to Tokyo. What happened to them once they got there?
Well, for my father, this was rather mysterious. He was getting no word back from the Kempeitai, the military police, who would dutifully come back every day to take the next day's dispatches off to the Tokyo censors, because MacArthur, even though the war was ostensibly over, managed to keep his censorship firmly in place, and no journalists were being allowed into southern Japan. So my father was kind of sending these off into a vacuum and hoping they were getting through, and then it began to gradually dawn on him, and eventually it was confirmed to him that they were all being censored. At that point, he decided to stay on and do a more ample job on the story. And he was there for nearly 3 weeks.
The account that most of us are familiar with about the immediate aftermath of the bombing was the story that John Hershey put together, of course, much later, called Hiroshima. Your father had one of the great stories of the century.
He did, and what he dreamed of doing was something like the job Hersey eventually did, but by the time he got out, there was nothing to be done, and all his words were censored. He felt, till the end of his life, of course, enormously frustrated by this, even though he had quite an illustrious career. I think what irritated him particularly was having fought censorship for so long in many theaters of war. He felt that the American people had a profound right to know exactly how they'd won the war, and MacArthur, whom he felt had his eye on the presidency, was extraordinarily angry that Japan was not captured by him like a cookie box, but was won by scientists in New Mexico. And the last thing MacArthur wanted was for the American people to know the details of this or the radiation or various other military aspects of the bomb.
As I understand it, your father believed that all of this work had been lost all these years.
He did. I mean, he was all over the map as a war correspondent. Was a Middle East journalist, a Mediterranean journalist, was all over Africa and South America. And the carbons, which were all he had, simply went astray. And at one point in his 70s, he located them, but then lost them again. And in my mind, they were always lost to the ages.
How did you find them?
I found them because I'm in the family home a couple of hours south of Rome, and I was going through an enormous upstairs room that had what might gently be called his archives in it, but it was just a Sargasso sea of crates and boxes and overflowing papers about waist or shoulder deep at times. And at a certain point, I found a crate which had in it debris from the end of the war in the Pacific. And there were all sorts of other stories there, and there they were, mildewed and crumbling and fragile and browning, but nevertheless there.
Now, you've sold them to this Japanese newspaper. Will they ever...
I sold a few of them. I mean, what they have published is perhaps 10 to 20% of the whole.
And will the rest and that material as well, will that ever appear in English?
Well, I'm certainly very hopeful. I have a New York agent and a Japanese agent working hard on it. And there are also about 50 photos that he took both in Nagasaki and in the POW camps in Nagasaki and environs, which he investigated thoroughly.
There were American POWs being held just outside of Nagasaki.
And actually inside Nagasaki. There were one of the most interesting aspects of the story. It was that he found a couple hundred British, Aussie, and American POWs who were working in one of the Mitsubishi plants 100 yards from where the bomb hit. And because they had ducked into a kind of protective trench, they were totally unharmed by the bomb, whereas the Japanese workers who totally ignored the air raid warning were all killed. And the only Americans in that group, a handful who were hurt, were the ones who watched it come down.
Anthony Weller, thanks very much for speaking with us. Good luck.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Anthony Weller, the son of George Weller. His father's stories are running in the Japanese newspaper Mainichi. Anthony Weller joined us from his home in southern Italy. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan.